We saw yesterday on Chav Gimel Amid Beis, towards the bottom, that as far as Birchas Avelim is concerned, which Rashi says consists of two brachos, we require Asara, but Ein Avelim in a minyan. So you cannot count the Avel as one of the ten. So you'll need 10 people besides the Avel. However, as far as Birchas Chasanim is concerned, you can include the Chasanim in the minyan. They become part of the minyan itself. Rashi points out here that the reason why you don't count the Avelim in the bracha is because Rashi says that they are the Misnachamim, but not the Menachamim themselves. And the bracha here includes Baal Nechamos, Achenu Baal Nechamos Yenachem Eschem, a prayer to Hashem that the Baal Nechamos should be Menachem you. And therefore, if the bracha itself consists of a prayer to Hashem on behalf of the Avelim, that they should be consoled, doesn't make sense that the Avelim would be part of the Mevarachim. Then they're not the Mevarachim, rather they're the Mizbarachim. So I wanted to make a few points here on this Gemara. Number one, there's a Chassam Sofer who makes a distinction between before the Kvura and after the Kvura. And he says the following, that whatever takes place before the Kvura, that for sure has to exclude the Avelim themselves. Like, let's say, for example, we learned, according to Rashi in Maimon Umoshav, that Rashi says Kishen Nosim Es Hameis LeKovro, which sounds like it was before the Kvura. Is that correct? Do you agree with me that Kishen Nosim Es Hameis LeKovro implies that it's before the Kvura? So in terms of Maimon Umoshav, where the Mishnah requires Asara, I believe that according to some Sofer's logic, as I'll mention in just a minute, it's a milsa de pshita that the Avelim are not included in the minyan, because this takes place before the Kvura. Because the Chassam Sofer says the following, before the Kvura, Ein ha'avel mitztarif l'shum dover d'havi onen. An onen is excluded from mitzvahs before Kvura. The chiddush of our Gemara is that when we get up to the Birchas Avelim, and Rashi says, Kishechozer min ha-kvura, Omdimu menachemim es-ovel, the two shuros and the avelim go down the middle, you need asor and each shura. And then at that point they recited the Birchas Avelim. Then it would seem that since it's after the kvura, the aninus has terminated, and therefore the avel should be chayev in mitzvahs. So the chiddush here is that even after the kvura, for a different reason entirely, the Avelim are not included in the minyan. And that's because they are the Misnachamim and not the Menachamim. And this bracha is part of Nichum Avelim, in which we turn to Hashem and we ask that Hashem be Menachem the Avelim.
Apparently the Tosfos Reed has another explanation.
As to what?
Regarding not counting the Avelim to the minyan.
So I'd like to hear that in just a minute. I just want to finish one point here. And that is that it's quite clear that this set of brachos is recited after the kvura. And that's called Berchov Ha'ir. The Gemara actually identifies Birchas Avelim as Birchas Rechova, Berchova Shal'ir. And this is after the kfura. So if it's after the kfura, you have to ask yourself the question, why shouldn't the avelim, who are now in a state of avelus, the chayim and all mitzvahs, why shouldn't they be part of the minyan for this asura? And that's where Rashi gives this explanation, that they are the misnachamim and not the menachamim. Let's hear what the Tosfos Reed has to say.
Avelim Cherudim be'evram.
Oh yeah, we mentioned that yesterday. Right.
So that's how.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Now the next point I wanted to make is the following. It says that Birchas Chasan Basor Chasan Min Aminyan. Now the Gemara Ksubis on Daf Zayin Amin Beis derives Birchas Chasanim, according to at least one Mandi Omar, from a Pasuk in Megillas Rus with regard to Boaz. And the Pasuk says, Vayikach Boaz Asor Zekenim, and Boaz gathered together 10 of the elders, the scholars, and the Gemara says, why did he gather them? To recite the Bracha for Rus. And that means Birchas Chasanim. So if we derive Birchas Chasanim Basora from Boaz, so there's an obvious problem here. Why does it say that Boaz took Asora Zekenim? All he needed was 9 Zekenim, because Chasanim in a minyan. And that's the Kasha that Chasam Sofer. So I wanted to suggest the following, that perhaps we can answer the Chasam Sofer's Kasha if we go back to our original fundamental distinction. We divide up this Mishnah into 2 parts. Part of the Mishnah fits into the category of what we call a Darshan of the Kedusha. And we go through the beginning of the Mishnah. Ein person al Shema, which of course has Baruch Hu and has Kaddish and Kedusha. That's clearly a Darshan of the Kedusha. Then Ein Over L'Fnei HaTeva, that also is a Darshan of the Kedusha. It has Kedusha in it. Now, Ein Nosin as Kapeim, we saw yesterday, is a machlok between the Rashba and the Turi Evan. The Rashba seems to identify Ein Nosin as Kapeim, for Nesias Kapeim Basara, that's a din of Bifnei Asara, meaning Asara Shal Minyan, not a din of Dovah Sheba Kedusha, but the Turi Evan identifies this as a Dovah Sheba Kedusha. And the reason he insists on doing so is because it was placed deliberately by Rebbe in the first half of the Mishnah. And what follows is Ein Karim B'Torah El Basar. And Kriyas HaTorah is certainly a Darshan Sheba Kedusha, if for no other reason, because of the Baruch Hu, when we recite the Birchas HaTorah. But it could be the Torah itself when it's read publicly. That's a statement of faith, and a public statement of faith is a Darshan Sheba Kedusha. Now it's interesting because the Rashba identifies the requirement of Asura in the Nesias Kapayim with the requirement of Asura in Zimun B'Shem. Meaning when you have Asura, then and only then you can recite Zimun B'Shem. And the Turi Evan understood that from the Rashba, we see that Zimun B'Shem, the requirement of Asura, is not a Dovah Shem Kedusha, but rather it's a Dovah Shem Minyan. And that means that we recite this bracha b'shem Hashem publicly in front of Asara, and that publicity, so to speak, of the Shem Hashem requires Asara. And therefore, the Turi Evan argues that no sin is kapeim, so far as in his understanding is the Torah Shem Kedusha, it should belong. And it does find its place in the first half of the Mishnah, whereas according to the Rashba, that it's only a Darshan Sheba Minyan and not a Darshan Sheba Kedusha, then its logical home, its natural home would have been in the second half of the Mishnah. Now clearly when we get to the requirement of Asara, in the case of Birchas Chasanim, in the Turi Evan's frame of reference, this is a Darshan Sheba Minyan. It's not a Darshan Sheba Kedusha, because it appears in the second part of the Mishnah. So now let's ask, what is the nature of a Darshan Sheba Minyan, and how does that apply to Birchas Chasanim? And the answer, I believe, lies in a In a Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says there's something called a dover shebefarhesia that requires asara, some sort of requirement of publicity. For example, he says that a get should be given publicly so that the Kohanim realize that they're not allowed to marry this woman. She received a get. And the same is true for chalitza, should be done publicly so that the Kohanim are aware of that. And it says that a bris milah also should be done in front of asara. That's not listed here at all. And the reason for that is because, according to the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, at least the way there's a super commentary on the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar called the Shaddal, his name was Luria, and he writes that back in the day, there were many different religions, or idolatrous religions for sure, that implemented Mila, and we had to publicize that our Mila is being done not for idol worshiping purposes, but for L'shem Hashem. So we need a Farhesi, we need a public gathering for the sake of Bris Mila. And in the case of Kruas HaMes, we require Asara, says the Shaddal, we require Asara because this is testimony that this body that's being placed in the ground will ultimately rise up at the time of Tchias HaMesim and live again. So the land, the ground, is only a pikadon. It's only a place where you deposit something that's being guarded for a period of time. And that also is a statement of faith that requires Asara. Now on this list you have Birchas Chasanim in Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. And what is the public nature of the declaration of the Chasan? He wants to be mefarsem that he found this woman, as the Gemara says of Avikot, let me Hashem ish le'isha, that God is behind the scenes. God is the one who's meshadet sheduchim. You know, in the animal kingdom, I don't think there's a divine providence in how one animal, a male, mates with a female. But in the human sphere, the chassan has to declare publicly that this is not an animalistic coincidence, and he found his mate, but rather Hashem was behind the scenes. That means that Birchas Chasan was in Dovash and Farhesia. Is hence, I understand the Pasuk in Boaz, and I can answer up the Chasam Sofer's Kasha. If I were to define Birchas Chasan as a Dovash and Kedusha, then you could ask the Chasam Sofer's question, why shouldn't Boaz be mitztarif to the minyan for Dovash and Kedusha? The Dovash Mekdusha is being implemented in his presence, no less than the presence of the other nine. But if it's a Dovash Mefarhesia, if it's his requirement to be Mefarsem Bifnei Asara, then he has to gather together 10 to create that Farhesia. You know, the fact that he's making a statement that I found this woman because of Hashem's intervention, that's not a person. You know, you can't be Mefarsem something to yourself. You have to be Mefarsem something to others. So, for example, there are those who say that when you recite Birchas HaGomel, the Mavarach is not included in the minyan. He has to get together 10 people beside himself. There also, it's not a Dovash HaKedusha, it's a Dovash HaFarhesia. He's making a statement that if he was able to walk out of the hospital and he's walking on 2 feet, that's again, the doctors get credit for that, but that's not because of the doctors, it's because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a person that he has to make. And the Minchas Tinich wants to suggest that if a person has to die al Kiddush Hashem b'fnei asara, we're not talking about the big three, we're talking about other averos, then the requirement of Kiddush Hashem v'nikdashti means that there are another 10 people besides the person who is giving up his life. Because he's being mefarsem, he's making a public statement that I don't want to eat this chazer, and even if it means I'll die, they're not going to force me to eat this. So whenever you have a dov farhesia, you're not min minyan. Now the Gemara Ksubas has an alternative shita that we derive the requirement of 10 in Birchas Chasanim from a pasuk in Tehillim, where it says, b'makelos birchu Hashem, I forgot the exact pasuk, but it says, if we had a Gemara Ksubas, I would show it to you inside. It says, "B'makelos Birch Hashem Makar Yisrael." Alis came Makar, which is a reference to marriage. And there, the Gemara derives the conclusion that you need a kohol, you need a minyan for Birchas Chasanim. Now, there I would say that the Chasan Atzmo has been a minyan. You know, it's our Gemara is not reflecting
the shita of Boaz, the derivation of Boaz, but rather the other possible derivation. That means that you make maybe it's possible that Birchas Hasan would be a Darvish of a Kedushin, so far as it's a call, and when the call gets together to be Mavarach Hashem as a Chovas call, that is a Dover, that is a Dover Shebe Kedusha. Okay, Rabbosai, let's go back to where we left off yesterday on Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis. And let's see how far we got. Did we get... Yeah, I'm sorry, let's move this this table here.
Moshe's a big guy. Can I push this?
Yeah, tell me where I have to go. Just put me wherever I have to be.
Okay. That's enough room. He's not that big.
So in the Mishnah itself, we finished up till Birchas Chasanim, and then we got up to Zivud.
Right.
So the Mishnah says, "Ein mezamnim al hamazon b'shem pachos me'asara." So if we want to recite in the Zivud Nevarach Elokeinu, then we need asara. We have to have 10 people, and the Gemara explains why. So this Gemara, you'll see. Let's see how many lines up would it be. I would say approximately 10 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. And the first word in the line in parentheses is v'chule, if that helps anybody. And it says, Kevon deboi lememar nevarech lelokeinu, botzir me'asara lav orach ara. Literally, this means it's not derech eretz to mention the name of God if there's less than asara noshim. Now, one way of understanding this, and according to the Tereb, and that's not the Rash Pashita, is that we're talking about a Dover Sheva Kedusha. In other words, when we publicly thank Hashem, and there's a chova on the tzibur to mention God's name, Nivarech Lelokeinu, it's like Baruchu, that becomes a Dover Sheva Kedusha. The Rashba, on the other hand, seems to assume it's a Dover Sheva Minyan. And the reason for that might be because this bracha of Zimun is really part of Birkas HaMazon. It's not a separate entity. In which case it might mean that what we have here is a Chovas Yachid, an individual, and each one of the members of this Zimun that has eaten together, that we all broke bread together, if you can say it that way, then we have a Chiyuv of Zimun. Now that Chiyuv of Zimun is incumbent upon each and every one of us. If we have a minion, so the minion will go ahead and thank Hashem by mentioning the name of Hashem. So we need a heter to mention Hashem's name in the context of Zimun, and for that we need the presence of Asara. But it's not like Baruch Hu, which is a separate clarion call, so to speak, to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim by gathering together 10 people. In any event, we go on to the last part of the Mishnah. You may remember.
Looks to me like there was a custom when you have a Zimun of Asura to stand up, so to speak, for Elokeinu. What would that represent?
That would sound like it's a Dover Sheva Kedusha. Because the Dover Sheva Kedusha is always recited by Amida. I mean, the question is Kriyas HaTorah. Kriyas HaTorah is a little bit complicated because there are two dimensions to Kriyas HaTorah. Some people stand for the Bracha itself, the Baruch Hu, because that itself is a Dover Sheva Kedusha, but the Kriya itself might not be a Dover Sheva Kedusha.
The Ramah holds that.
And furthermore, the Kriya itself is a key of Talmud Torah, and you know, now that the Rav Gamliel died, Talmud Torah is B'Yeshiva. But as far as the Dover, now in Birchas Chasanim, the poskim say that even if Birchas Chasanim is a Dover Sheva Kedusha, we sit, and that's because of the Seuda, which means that there's a fundamental difference between the Sheva Brachas under the Chuppah and the Sheva Brachas during the Shivas Yimei HaMishnah. The Sheva Brachas during Yimei HaMishnah clearly are not a Dover Sheva Kedusha. It's part of the Seuda, and therefore we sit for the Seuda, we sit for the Sheva Brachas. However, under the chuppah, there it seems that we should really stand for the Sheva Brachas. I have seen areas in which, places in which they stand for the Sheva Brachas. And that would mean that under the chuppah, the Birchas Chasanim would be a Dabash of a Kedusha. So it could be that even if I derive, Birchas Chasanim from Boaz, as what we called it, a Dabash of a Minyan in the context of the Pirkei de Rabbi Elezer, that might be more appropriate for Shivas Yimei HaMishteh as opposed to B'Shas Nesu'in. But now I'd like to spend a little time with you on the last part of the Mishnah, which the Gemara tries to explain, and that's Karkos. Here for sure we're not dealing with the Dabar Sheva Kedusha, but rather Dabar Sheva Minyan. And this Minyan requires 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kohen. Minani Mili. What's the source for this requirement of a Kohen and the requirement of 10 people, the balance of the people are Yisraeli. So again, let's go on. Let's repeat, let's reiterate the background here. We're talking about Karka Shel Hegdesh, and we're talking about Pidyon Karka Shel Hegdesh. Now, in order to be Poda Karka Shel Hegdesh, we need to do a Shuma, and we have to evaluate exactly how much the Karka is worth, because less than its value would not qualify as a Pidyon. And that's called the Dovash Tzarech Shuma. And the pidyon has to be done with Lefishovi HaKarka. Okay, now fine. Who's going to do the pidyon? It's the Magdish, the person who was Magdish the Hegdesh. And we're talking about a general case of karka. There's a long discussion here in the Meiri about a different kind of pidyon karka. That's called the steachuza. And there, the pidyon has nothing to do with shuma, with the valuation of how much the karka is worth on the market as a piece of real estate. But rather, it goes lufi cheshben zera. There's a din of chomer sa'orim, a certain volume of sa'orim. And there's no din of shuma. But we're talking about the classic case of pidyon karka shel hegdesh, and therefore we require a shuma, and the shuma has to be done by asara. Omar Shmuel. So the Gemara asked me not immediately. Omar Shmuel. Shmuel says asara kohenim ksuvim v'parsha. If you look at the parsha of pidyon hegdesh at the end of Sefer Vayikra in parsha Bechukosai in Perek of Zion, and you start counting up how many times the word Kohen appears, you will find that it appears 10 times. And here the Gemara is going to operate with the principle called Miut Achar Miut. Ein Miut Achar Miut El L'Rabos. So what are the 10 times that it says in Bechukosai Kohen? So first of all, we have to divide the parasha in Perek of Zayin into three titles, three subjects. The first subject is what's called Erechim. And it says the following. Ve'amido lifnei ha-kohen, ve'arich oso ha-kohen, al pi ha-shatasig yad ha-noder yarichenu ha-kohen. So in the parasha of Erechim, we have one pasuk, and Kohen appears 3 times. Then we move on to the parasha of Pidyon Behema. And there again, the word Kohen appears 3 times. It says, Ve'ha'amad v'ha'amid es ha-behema lefnei ha-kohen, ve'arich ha-kohen osa, bein tov bein ra ke'erkecha ha-kohen ke'im yeh. And then we have the parasha of Karkos, also in the same section in Perek of Zion. And there, let's count up how many times it says Kohen. It says Ve'ishki Akdishes Beisola Beisos Karka. It's Mechubel Karka. Kodesh Hashem Vericho Kohen. That's number 1. Bein Tov Bein Ra. Kasher Yaricho Soha Kohen Ken Yakum. That's number 2. And then it says Vechishav Lo Kohen Es Hakesef Al Pi Hashanim. That's number 3. And then it says, V'chishav lo ha-kohenes mitzas ha-erkecha. That's number four. So we have three in the parasha of Erechin. We have another three in the parasha of Pidyon Behema. And finally we have four in the parasha of Pidyon Karka. So all told, we have ten times the word ha-kohen appears in this context. The Tosfos Yontif on our Mishnah points out that there's another HaKohen towards the end of that parasha, and it says LaKohen Tiyeh Achuzaso, but that has nothing to do with Shumas Hegdesh, and therefore that has to do with the Stei Achuzah, which goes to Kohanim, and therefore it's not relevant to have discussion. So all told, we have 10 times that it says Kohen,
which in Perek
Chavzayin. I'm not going to go through it again, John, because I went through all the
pasukim. I just want to find it. That's all.
Yeah, just Perek Chavzayin, Pasuk Ches, and then you go to Pasuk Yud Aleph, and then Pasuk Yud Aleph. So what does Shmuel derive from this? He says Chad Legufei. The first time it says Kohen, the parsha is teaching us that you require a Kohen. He himself is, so to speak, the representative of Hegdesh, and he has to be there on the panel in order to evaluate the Hegdesh. Now here there's a girsa which is questionable, and it says v'chad lima'ute, and there's a long discussion here. I don't know if we're going to have time for it as to why this girsa is not acceptable, and that's the Turi Evan. But leave it out for now, because again, you know, I want to get to a certain point. So it says v'idach, and what do we do with the other nine times that it says kohen in the parasha? Havi miut achar miut. Now it's each time that the Torah repeats HaKohen, it becomes a mute. It doesn't mean that the Torah is adding another requirement, the second Kohen, but rather the second time it says Kohen and so forth and so on, and it means Dafka Kohen, well, that's called a mute achar mute, because the first HaKohen told me it's got to be a Kohen and not a Yisrael. And now the Torah is telling me again, it has to be a Kohen and not a Yisrael, meaning that it's a ribui. That's called Ein Miut Achar Miut Ela L'Rabos. Now, the source for this principle, a very kind of paradoxical statement, that Ein Miut Achar Miut Ela L'Rabos, that because the Torah gave you another miut, it becomes a ribui, is a parsha at the end of Baloscha with regard to Aaron Umiriam. And it says there, Harak Ach. Now look at those two words. Harak Ach. They both mean the same. Harak Ach b'moshe diber Hashem alok gam bonu diber. So we have a mute of Rak, and then followed by another mute of Ach. And it's coming as a ribui. Ribui to say that not only did Hashem speak to Moshe, but he spoke also to us. That's the source for Ein Miut Achar Miut El L'Rabos. So what's the ribui here? In our case, the ribui is times nine, and that's going to be Tisha Yisraelim. And then we have the first Pasuk HaKohen, V'chad Kohen, in order to teach you that you need a Kohen. So now the Gemara asks the following question, a very naive, simple question. V'eimo, why don't we say the following? Chamisha Kohenim V'chamisha Yisraelim. Because if your ribui of Yisraelim is because of Ein Miut Achar Miut El L'Rabos, then what we should say is that the second Kohen is a miut, and that's coming as a miut achar miut l'rabos, and that tells you that you can add a Yisrael, correct? You can add a Yisrael. But now we get to the third time that it says HaKohen, and that's again a miut. So in the third time that it says a miut, that should be a miut, and that's not considered a miut achar miut, because that's a miut onto itself. And as the first Kohen and the third Kohen, the time it says Kohen is going to miut. And then if you keep going, you'll say that about the fifth time it says Kohen, that's also a miut, it has to be a Kohen. And then the seventh time, and so forth and so on. You'll end up with five Kohen and five Yisraelim. And the Gemara ends up with Kasha, it means that we have no answer. Now at the end of our Mishnah, the Mishnah establishes that Adam, that if you're poda, a human being, Kayotzev, and it has the same status as being poda karka. We're going to learn that from Gzeira Shava. And it means that once again you need one Kohen and nine Yisraelim to be part of the panel. So the Gemara asks, Adam Mikadosh, can you be makdish a human being? We never heard such a thing. So why does this human being need pinyon? Om Rabbi Avo, be Omer, we're talking in the parish of Erechin, dummy a lie. A person makes a commitment that he will pay his value to Hegdish. And what does it mean, his value? And the Gemara is going to tell us that we evaluate a person, and the Bryce is going to tell us exactly how we evaluate a person in order to determine exactly how much he should pay Hegdish. And now we're going to need again a panel of 10, comprised of one Kohen and 9 Yisraelim. And Desanya HaOmer Dami Alai, I will give my Dami, my value, to Hegdish. Shomin also ke'evet, we evaluate him as if he were an evet. Now, what kind of evet are we talking about? This is a gigantic discussion here. We're going to assume for our purposes, and that's how the Rishonim seem to assume, that we're talking about an evet ivri. Again, Tosfos is going to have a whole problem with this. You'll see that the bottom Tosfos on the page. But let's just assume that we want to know about this person who said, quote, Dami Alai, what is his value as an Eved Ivri? Oh, and in order to determine what his value is, we need a Shuma, and that Shuma has to take place in the presence of Asara. The Eved is Kashla Karkos. How do we know that we require a Shuma of Asara to determine how much this person will be worth as an Eved? The Chsiv, because we have a Pasuk that. Excuse me, I don't know what's happening to my voice today. This pasuk is going to equate a human being with an event. How do you see that equation? It says in the pasuk, "Visnachaltem osam livnechem achreim lereshes achuza." So we're talking about a hekesh of eved leachuza. Achuza is a piece of karka. Eved is a human being. Kishem shebekarkos. Just like we learned before, in the case of karkos, the Torah requires asara to be poda karkos. So too, when we evaluate a person as an eved, because he said dami alai, we also need a shuma in front of 10. And the 10 are exactly the same 10 that we require for the shuma of karkos. And this leads us up to the Mishnah, which is really what I was hoping to study today. Now again, we'll spend just a minute or two to explain the problem of Eved here that Tosfos raises. I just have to get the right place here because he has a summary of this discussion. Oh. He says the following, that Tosfos Dibra Masel Shamin understood that we're talking about an Eved Ivri. Now, the Pasuk of Visnachaltem actually refers to an Eved Knani, because we're talking about the Klal Yisrael entering into the land and inheriting the land, and they inherit the Avodim. And when it says Visnachaltem Libnechem, etc., etc., we're talking about an Eved Knani. So how is it that we're going to derive from a Hekesh between Kark and Eved Knani a Shuma, a Din Shuma for an Eved Ivri? So the Marsha writes on this Tosfos that really the Gemara has in mind an Eved Knani. It means the following. We're talking about Ben Chorin, and he said Dami Alai. Even though he's a Hebrew, right? He's a Jew. Nevertheless, Shomino Soke Eved Knani, and therefore this hekesh between Eved Knani and Karka is meaningful. But that's not the way Tosfos understood it. So Tosfos really ends up with a question, which the Chasam Sofer tries to answer, and he says the following. Again, there's a whole long list of Mefarshim. We don't have time for all of them. I'm just going to mention the Chasam Sofer, maybe one other Mefarsh. He says the following, that there's a hekesh between Eved Ivri and Karkos. Why? Because the Pasuk of Visnachaltem, which generates this hekesh to Karka, refers not just to Eved Knani, but also to Eved Ivri. V'afi says she'omnom bi'eved atzmo ein ze shayach el bi'eved knani shu nachas ha'odon. In other words, even though technically, if you want to talk about nachla, meaning ownership, it's only appropriate to eved knani. Ach hu miskayim af be'eved ivri bibonov. Why? What happens if you own an eved knani and you give her, you give him a shivcha knanis? Then the children also have the status of avodim knaniyim, and that's called nachlas ha'adam. But there's a kiyum here bibonov, so it means that even bonov are included in this hekesh. So again, even though as far as the eved himself is concerned, we're talking about the eved knani, and he is owned by the Adon, but we have something similar in the case of Eved Ivri, because in the case of Eved Ivri, if the Adon would give the Eved Ivri a Shivcha Knanis, that's called Yud, then the children that are born as a result of this marriage between an Eved Ivri and a Shivcha Knanis are Avodim Knanin. So we see that indirectly, at least, the Eved Ivri is included here in the parasha, because even from an Eved Ivri there's a Nachla in the case of a Shivcha Knanis. All right, there's a lot more here, but I don't think we're going to spend too much time. Let's learn the next Mishnah. Hakorei Batorah. So a person gets an Aliyah. Until now we've been discussing that we have to call up three people to the Torah. But we right on a Monday, a Thursday, and Shabbos Mincha. But we never discussed in the Mishnah how many psukim each Ola has to read. What's the minimum? And the answer is Lo Yifchos Mishlosha Psukim. Again, we had long discussions about this in the Gemara with regard to the Kriya of Rosh Chodesh and Dilug and Pisuk and so forth and so on. But in the Mishnah's language, this is the first time that the Mishnah addresses the question of what's the minimum number of psukim that we have to read for each kore. Again, we know that the total number of psukim is 10. But how much is the minimum for each karui? It's 3. Next. V'lo yikra l'miturgamon yosem mipasuk echad. So back in the day, at the time of the Mishnah, there was something called a miturgamon. It's questionable exactly when that minhag got lost, at least was for most of Klal Yisrael. But in any event, back in the day, there was a mitargamon. And the mitargam had to translate each pasuk separately. And it was very critical that everyone would understand the mitargamon. That was the whole nature of the takana. So if you're going to feed the mitargamon too many psukim at the same time, and the mitargam is going to have to hold cup, he's going to have to keep a cheshbon of all the psukim and then translate them, it's going to be very difficult for him to be accurate in his translation. And therefore the Mishnah establishes that the korei should stop after each pasuk and wait until the miturgamon translates that pasuk. Because again, if he would read a whole bunch of psukim together at one time, and then we expect the mitargam to translate all those psukim, the mitargamon might make a mistake, because he's not reading it from a text, he's just translating it by heart. And then what would happen if he makes an error? The people listening to his targum are also going to misunderstand what the psukim are. And the psukim themselves, at least in some cases, are teaching us how to do the mitzvos, and we have to make sure that we understand how to do the mitzvos. Again, we have Torah Shebal Peh, but there's also Torah Shebal Tzav. Now, the Ran adds another point. He says that back in the time of the Mishnah, there was no problem for the people to understand the Targum. In other words, the language of the Targum was the spoken language. It was the vernacular. However, he says that Kishechazru mi Bavel, he says when they came back from Bavel, that's when Ezra made his takon of Targum. Why? Because Nishtakech Mehem Lashon HaKodesh, they began to forget Lashon Kodesh and they only knew the Lashon Targum. So therefore Ezra got up and he made a takana that they should be mitargam into Lashon Arami, because that was the spoken language and that would be the language that they understood. Now today we don't understand Targum, and therefore it would be an exercise of futility to set up a mitargam. But back in the day, that was the language they understood. So the Hebrew they didn't understand. They understood the Targum. And that would be the Targum was really the agent who would facilitate their understanding of the Torah. So it's very critical that the Targum translate the Torah precisely. So if you give him too many psukim at the same time, you feed him three psukim or five psukim and more, he can't necessarily, it's almost unavoidable that he'll make a mistake somewhere along the line. However, B'Navi, when it comes to the Targum of Navi, now here we see a big chiddush, that this takana of Targum applied not only for the Kriyas HaTorah itself, but also for the Haftorah, which was read from a Navi, is then we're much more lenient and liberal with regard to how many psukim the Kore is allowed to read and feed to the Metargim, Shlosha. He could go up as far as three psukim at a time, and let the Metargim be Metargim the three psukim. Now what happened to the question of Tos, that the Metargim might make a mistake if you're giving him too many psukim? So there are two approaches to answer this question. One approach is that since Tos is something that is rare, in the case of Navi, the Tos is even more rare. It's more uncommon that he would make a mistake. I'm not exactly sure why, but that's one possibility. Maybe because Navi is a lot easier to understand, or maybe the translation of the Navi is more thematic. Every pasuk in Navi has a motif, which the Navi is trying to transmit to the people. But I like the second answer. The second answer is that Mehanaviim lo yetze hora lamaisa. Thus, when we read Neviim, you know, we talk about the rebuke of the Neviim to the people, or you know, messages of faith and consolation and belief in the future. We're not talking about what we call hora. There's no halachic significance to the reading of Navi. There are no new mitzvahs in Navi. And therefore, we're not afraid, even in the worst case scenario, if the Metargim is not precise, we're not afraid that people will misunderstand the Torah itself and they'll come to violate the Torah.
Some of the psukim in Yeshayah, that's a real challenge to translate and make.
So that I would rather go with the second approach. That you know, in the worst case scenario, what's the danger here? There's no danger of horal amaisa. You know, Yeshayahu is wonderful, and 90% of Navi, I don't begin to understand. I'm exaggerating 90%, but a major chunk. But nevertheless, as we say in Yeshua, well, what's so terrible if he makes a bit of a mistake? So we can be a little bit more lenient over here. But again, it would seem that nevertheless the requirement is shlosha psukim. The Rambam actually says that's what it should be. He writes the Rambam that Hakori b'Navi yesh lo likros l'mitargim shlosha psukim v'mitargim shloshtam. Notice the Rambam holds that there's a requirement. It's not just permission, but the requirement is that the Kore read three psukim and the mitargim read three psukim. I assume that the reason for this is because we want to speed up the process. We've discussed this in the past. Not to read too many psukim in the case of Navi. And Tosa seems to assume that we don't have this requirement of reading three psukim, and therefore Tosa says on the top of the page, Ein anu makel v'turguan afil b'Navi el posik echad. So he's not speeding it up, you know, by requiring three. But yet, even Tosa seems to admit to some extent that the Rambam is right, because he says, Rak is the end of the second line, B'tchilas Haftorah, the first three psukim in the Torah, of the Haftorah, should be read together as a unit, Lo'odia ki kein hadin, that we really want to speed up the process a little bit. We really want the Kore to read three psukim at once. Now, it also could be possible that since the Navi has themes, then usually a theme is made up of three psukim. So that if we want the Metargim to convey that, transmit that theme to the people by explaining it in the vernacular, we want it to have three psukim. That's what goes on over here. Okay. Now, now, what we're reading here is three psukim from three different parshios. And the Ran points out that this is impossible. You can't take the Gemara literally because there is no such thing as reading three psukim from three different parshios. That doesn't exist. But rather, he says it means shlosha inyonim chalukim, meaning there are three different themes, meaning you can see within one parsha, sometimes multi-themes, and therefore if you have three psukim, and each one of those three psukim is minyanim chalukim, then korin echad echad. Then even in the case of a Navi, we're going to drop this this heter, or according to the Rambam, there's a requirement of the Kore reading three psukim, but rather he's going to have to read one pasuk and wait for the mitargim. It would be absolutely confusing to the people if the mitargim would translate three psukim from three different inyanim that are three different themes. That's not something we can expect them to understand. And the Ran adds the language. He says, "Kevin shehemi inyanim chalukim eino rashoy le'arbavam." You cannot integrate them together. They have to be read each pasuk and translated separately. Okay, the Gemara is going to talk about different cases where, especially one particular case that we're going to discuss, where the Kriyas HaHaftorah go in even three consecutive psukim, goes from one inyan to another inyan to another inyan. The Gemara is going to actually give us a case to study. Now, all this that we're discussing of Shalosh Parshios, that only applies in the case of a Navi. In a case of the Torah itself, then we don't jump from one parsha to another parsha. So let's see the last part of the Mishnah, which clarifies that point. Midalgim bin Navi, in the case of a Haftorah, you don't have to read it the psukim consecutively, but rather you can jump around from one parsha to the other. But in contrast, ein midalgim bin Torah. If you jump from one one parsha to another in Torah, the people are going to get confused, and they won't be able to hear the Torah properly. But let's go back to the case of a Navi. Ad kama hu midaleg. In the case of a Navi, can you open up Sefer Shmuel and then jump to Sefer Melachim? No. Ad kidei, we have a new shear of time. Usually the shear of time for simultaneity is Tokadei Sheila Shalom, but here it's a different shear. Ad kidei shalo yifso kamiturgaman. What does that mean? The Miturgamon will take a few seconds to translate the Pasuk, and during those seconds, we're going to do Glila, and we're going to go from one Parsha to another Parsha. And how long does it take to do Glila from one Parsha to the other? Depends on how far you're jumping, right? If you jump from here to there, you know, if you go from Sefer Yoshua to Sefer Yishayo Anavi, you know, Chagag Zkari Malachi, then that's going to take a long Glila. So therefore, you have to be mishayer that the maximum glila, the maximum merchak, the distance between one parsha and another within one haftorah, should be the amount of time it would take for the miturgamon to finish his targum of the previous pasuk that you read, the last pasuk. That doesn't give you much time, and therefore the Mishnah wants to make sure that the people are not sitting around waiting. You know, they've already heard the targum, and now you're still rolling the Navi until you can get to the proper place that you want to get to. That's not covered at Tzibur. That's called Tircha de Tzibura. We don't want the Tzibur to have to wait, and therefore we're going to give you a very short period of time to do the Glila, to go from one parsha to the other. And during that period of time, the Tzibur is listening to the Mitargim. When the Mitargim finishes his pasuk, then the Kori is going to read the next pasuk from a different parsha, because that other parsha is very close by. So the Gemara asks, Hani Shlosha Psukim. The Mishnah says that every single Kore has to read a minimum of three psukim. Is Keneged Mi? Now this Keneged Mi is very interesting, because if you recall, Back on Daf Chaf Aleph, when the Gemara was talking about three kruim, the Gemara asks the same question of Keneged Mi. But here, the Gemara is addressing the question of the Psukim. Now, back on Daf Chaf Aleph, the Gemara answers that the reason why we need three kruim is because of either Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim or because of Kohanim Levi'im Yisraelim. And just to demonstrate that this Gemara that we're learning now about three Psukim is fundamentally different than the three kruim, I will point out to you, as the Tosa Rush does, that here in our Gemara we're only going to see one approach, that the significance of the number three is to correspond to Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim. There's no mention here of Kohanim Levi'im Yisraelim. Says the Tosa Rosh, the reason for that is we're talking about each Karui. We're not talking about three Kruim. So when we talk back in the Gemara about three Kruim, then it makes sense to say the Takon of requiring three is so that we'll call up one Kohen, we'll call up a Levi, we'll call up Yisrael. But now we're talking about one particular Aliyah, let's say it's a Kohen, and the Kohen has to read a minimum of three Psukim. Why is that significant? Why was the number three chosen? And here we have only one answer. Or of Asi, can I get Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim? So there's no answer here, which the Gemara gave, I think, earlier, double check it, in the name of Rav, I believe, if I remember correctly, that this Kohanim Levi'im the Israeli, that's not relevant here, because that doesn't have anything to do with how many psukim you're going to read. You're going to read psukim, keneged Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, and in Teferes Yisrael, the super commentary on the Mishnah mentions that this is a remez, that Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim are all included in Torah Shebichsav, meaning even Torah Shebichsav has within it the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim. Again, that's some sort of a fantastical idea, but that's the idea. Next, the Mishnah says, Lo Yikra La Miturgum. Now here's a long, long quote from the Mishnah. I'm not exactly sure why the Gemara has to quote the entire Mishnah when it only needs the last few words of the Mishnah, but maybe the Gemara wants to make sure we understand where we're holding here. Lo Yikra La Miturgum Yosim Pasukav Benavi Shlosha Psukim Vimhayu Shloshtam Shalosh Parashios. If the three Psukim are in three different Parashios, Kore Echad Echad, then the Kore is feeding the Meturgam on one Pasuk at a time. Now again, let's just reemphasize what we said before, the name of the Ran, that when it says Shalosh Parashios, you can't take that literally. We don't have a Navi in which we read from Shalosh Parashios, but rather it means Shlosha Inyanim Chalukim. And now the Gemara is going to give an example of Shlosha Inyanim Chalukim. Kigon. Okay, now we're going to learn three psukim that are consecutive in Yeshaya Perek Nun Beis. Let's go through the three psukim. Ki ko amar Hashem chinam nimkartem. And then it says, v'lo b'kesef tiga elu. And then we have the very next pasuk. Ki ko amar Hashem Elokim Mitzrayim yarad ami Barishona Lagur Shom Vaashur bi Efes Ashako. And then we have the next pasuk, the third pasuk in that series, Viato Malipo Ni'um Hashem. And then it goes on to say, Ki Lukach Amichinom, etc., and etc. So this is called, in the Ran's language, Shlosha Inyanim Chalukim. So what we want to do now is take a minute and go through these three psukim, according to Rashi and according to the Mitzudas David, all over there in Sefer Yeshayahu. The first pasuk Rashi says, Chinam Nimkartem, is a message for the ultimate Geula, and it means the following, Chinam Nimkartem. You know what? You were sent into Golus because of something that's really cheap. It's not worth anything for you. And that is the Yetzer Hara sold you a bill of goods, and you capitulated to the Yetzer Hara's power and allurement, and that's called Chinam Nimkartem. You were sold b'chinam, for nothing. You're not going to get any benefit from it. You know, you're going to work as slaves in Golus. Nobody's going to pay you anything. You're just... That's the low shiftless and the experience of Klal Yisrael in Golus, Chinam Nimkartem. However, Here's the consolation of Yeshaya in this pasuk. V'lo b'kesef tigalu. You will not have to gather together millions and sums, vast sums, in order to get yourself out of the state of avdus when you're in exile. Ella, all you need is tshuva. That's what the pasuk is telling you when it says b'chinam v'lo b'kesef tigalu. Now the next pasuk is referring to Mitzrayim. That's already a specific pinpoint, and the Navi is telling us something about the nature of Golus Mitzrayim. It says, Mitzrayim Yorad Ami. What does this mean? Until now we've been saying, Chinam Nimkarta. You know, there was no justification for you being sold as slaves in Golus, because it's all a result of sin. But now, the beginning at least of Golus Mitzrayim, in contrast to the general Golios, starts on the right foot, so to speak. It's not Bechinam as opposed to the rest of the Golios. Why? Because Klal Yisrael really owed something. They owed a debt of gratitude to Mitzrayim because they had no food. There was such a famine in the land that the Bnei Yisrael had to go down to Mitzrayim. So that's the contrast between Mitzrayim and any other Golios. We're going to soon see that the pasuk is to say that that doesn't in any way exonerate Mitzrayim. You know, so the Mitzrayim who were Meshaving Klal Yisrael, they were not in any way justified, and they'll be taken to the punishment for that. Now the end of this pasuk goes on to a different topic, and that's Ashur. Ashur be Efes Ashako. In other words, when the Oshek of Ashur against the people of Israel and Sancheiriv and all the rest, that was not based on any debt or any gratitude whatsoever that we owed Ashur, because we didn't go down to Ashur to buy goods during a famine year. Then we get to the third pasuk. Now for the third pasuk, we're going to use Mitzudas David. Until now we've relied heavily on Rashi. The third pasuk says, V'ata malipo ni'um Hashem. So I'm going to read to you the translation, the explanation of the Mitzudas David. This is Rav David Pardo. And I'm not sure if I understand it. Maybe together as a Chabura we'll be able to figure it out. Ve'ata malipo. It's perhaps a description of God's dialogue or claim against Ashur, and I think Ashur here represents many enemy, adversary nations that subjugated the Jewish people during its history. Mali Lahasho says Bonai Po. This is a consolation of Yeshayahu and Ovi. Ato Mali Po. Why should I leave my children, says the Mitzudas David, for a long time in this situation of Golos? And then the next part of the pasuk says, Ki lukach ami chinam. And he says the following, Halo mitchila nilkach ami lehem al chinam. Right, we used Ashur here as the jumping off point, and Ashur, we don't owe them any debt, they just subjugated us. May olam lo gamlu lahem tova, they never gave anything good for the Jewish people. And the next part of the pasuk says, Moshlov yehalelu. Right, that's not written here in the Gemara, but the pasuk itself says the following, Hamoshlimbo yisparu batzlachasam v'yomru yedeyem rama. In other words, those who subjugate the Jewish people, they give themselves a pat, they boast about it. Look how successful we were. And then we get to the last part of the pasuk. It says, "V'tamid kol hayom shmi minoatz." Now I thought that this had to do with God's name, but let's see what the Mitzvah's done. He says, Shmi Mechulal Umevuza Be'enehem. Oh, I think that's more or less what I wanted to say here, that there's a blasphemy here on the part of the enemies of the Jewish people. Look how we're successful against the nation of God. Where is their God? And all that blasphemy is going to justify what it says at the beginning of this pasuk, V'ata ma'lipo. I mean, to make a long story short, and it's a very long story, these three psukim, each one of them is a thought unit unto itself, And clearly, if you're going to read to the Meturgam on more than one pasuk, in this case, Shloshtam Misholosh Parshios, the Meturgamon is going to get very confused, because again, there's just a wealth of information that he has to keep in his head to translate three psukim, each of which is so different than the other one.
Right.
And therefore it's called Sholosh Parshios. But again, as the Ran says, it's not Sholosh Parshios. These are three psukim contiguous, one after the other, but there are three in Yonim Chalukim. And then it says, And we'll just read a few more lines and then we'll end it. It says, Midalgim Inavi V'yein Midalgim in Torah. There's no such thing as Dilug with regard to Torah. So in Navi, it's quite common. Again, according to Gemara, the Dilug has to be within a very close proximity until the Mitagim finishes that puzzle. But I think in our context, you know, everything is printed in the Chumash. You know, they tell you here, turn to this, and then Malachi. But in Torah, there's no such thing as diluk. We only read psukim consecutively. For a midi, that's not so. Now, I don't know, the Gemara could have quoted Tainus Tzibur, but anyway, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Yuma. The Kohen Gadol, after the Soriah Mishtalech reached the precipice, and the word got back to the Kohen Gadol, then he would check out of the Azara, and he would go into what's called the Ezras Noshim, and there he would read the Torah publicly. And look at the various parashios that comprise his kriya. Number one, Kore Achrimos. He reads from Parshas Achrimos. This is the Parsha of the Arayas. And then, V'ach Be'asar. That's in Parshas Emor. Okay, now Emor is not that far away from Achrimos, but nevertheless it's a different Parsha. And here he's talking about the Kedusha Sayom of Emor. And then the Gemara doesn't mention it here, but then he jumps to the third Parsha, which the Gemara says in Yuma, which is Pinchas, to read of the Musaf of Leon. Right. That's at the end of Bamidbar. Frekta Gemara, Hakam and Daleg, Amar Abai Lokasha. It's not a problem. Why? Kan Bechdeshi Yifsok HaMiturgamon. And I think what the Gemara is saying here is that from Achrimos until Ach Be'asar, which is in Parshas Emor, it's still within the shear of Kedesh Yifsok HaMiturgamon. Of Kedesh Yifsok HaMiturgamon. So that the Turgamon is busy translating the last word in the parasha of Achrimos, and we can quickly do the Kohen Gadol, I guess, he'll do the Glila, and by the time he finishes his Targum, boom, he's ready to read Parshas Achba Solachodesh. But for Khan, but if the Kohen Gadol would be Medaleg B'Yom HaKippur B'Chdei Shelo Yifsok HaMiturgamon, right, if it would be a separation where they're not smuchim zelos, that would not be excessive. That would not be acceptable. Now, what do we do with Bamidbar? Because Bamidbar, Pinchas is really much further along. So here he has an explanation in the footnote here. He says that the Gemara explains in Yuma Daf Ayin that the reason why we read from Bamidbar is there the Matarge, there the Kore, meaning the Kohen Gadol, is going to read Baal Peh. They didn't want to take out another Sefer Torah, which would have again shortened the time period for Glila, if you follow what I mean, because they could have the third Sefer Torah, another Sefer Torah ready, a second Sefer Torah ready immediately. Kedesh lo yomru harishon hayapasul. The people might mistakenly think that the reason why they're taking out another Sefer Torah is because the first one is pasul. In Kevadei Afma Shekora Achba Asor Haibioso Sefer Shekora Achrimos. Apparently, there was only one Sefer from both Achrimos and Emor. Otherwise, again, you'd have the same problem that if you take out a second Sefer, people are going to say, well, the first Sefer was Possel. So the Kriyas HaKohen had to be from one Sefer only. When he got to Chumash Pekudim and he would read the Parash in Pinchas, he would be reading it Baal Peh, which is a pellet to me. How you're allowed to read Pesukim Baal Peh. Okay, that's a different sugya. For that, we'd have to learn the Sefer Yuma. So let's make a note that we got up to Veha Alok Tani. Okay? So we're gonna see that the Gemara rejects this whole thesis that the Kohen Gadol would be allowed to go from one parsha to the other and skip, even if it's b'chdeish yifsok haturgma, because the Mishnah seems to imply that there is no dilug at all in Torah b'chsav, in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And the Gemara is going to have to come up with a whole other answer to explain how the Kohen Gadol was able to do this. So, although I wanted to get to the next Mishnah, but we were a little bit pressured for time, and that's where we got. Okay, everyone should have a great day.